Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to JFOD News, the only place you shall get your news. I'm just kidding. Could you imagine? Yeah, welcome to another live stream. I appreciate you guys all tuning in. This edition, we are going to be discussing Russia, and more specifically, Russia's response to this pandemic. Because there still is in people's minds this sort of nation state mentality, this us versus them mentality along the nation state level, when we really need to realize that this has been a global situation. This is a global situation that is happening. So we need to have a global response. I think personally, we need to globally stand up against these fascistic leaders who are trying to use this pandemic as a pretense to usher in all sorts of techno-fascist control over every aspect of our life. That's what I think. So I think it's important not to get caught up in, the U.S. is so bad, but Russia is so good, or the U.S. is so good, but Russia is so bad, or China is so bad, but the U.S. is good, or China and Russia versus the U.S. and Europe, and all this geopolitical stuff is a big distraction right now. That's how high the stakes are. So today, I think it's important to dispel any rumors that Russia somehow has been above the fray with this thing and is playing some sort of three-dimensional chess with their response to the pandemic. And I think that there's a great piece in a publication called Off Guardian, which does really great work, considerably better work than the Guardian publication does. The Guardian has become a complete piece of propagandistic nonsense for the establishment. But Off Guardian is doing great work, debunking this COVID narrative at every turn, and just in general doing great original investigative reporting. And this is a piece in the Off Guardian by Riley Wagaman, who is based in Moscow. And the title of the article we're going to go through is Myth Versus Reality in COVID Russia. It's time to part ways with the conscience-soothing fairy tales. So I think that that's going to be very telling. We're going to jump into that. We're going to see what's going on. It's going to be, I think it's going to be pretty fascinating, pretty interesting. I apologize for doing this at a later time. I try to do these at 1 p.m. Eastern, but that did not work out today. So I'm doing this one at 5 p.m. Eastern. I know that's going to throw some folks who are usually in the chat, but that's what happened today. I will be back on time tomorrow for sure. We're also going to read a second article today about Russia. This one's called Bank of Russia Explores Centralized Digital Currency System That Can Restrict Certain Purchases via Cyber Polygon 2021. Now, what this is about is CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. I've talked about those before. That's the new version of digital money that is going to be rolled in a number of countries in the upcoming years. And it's basically, it's not your regular old swipe your debit card digital money. This is programmable money that will be on blockchain, that will be able to surveil every one of your transactions to a whole new level. And we'll be able to program your money in such a way that you can only spend it on certain things that you want to. And you're not going to be allowed to spend it on other things. You're not going to be allowed to go into certain restaurants. You're not going to be allowed to spend money without outside of 5 miles of where you live or whatever random arbitrary stipulations are put on it. You know, you're going to have to jump through all sorts of hoops. If you don't have all of your medical procedures up to date, if you know what I'm saying, you're not going to be able to use that money. It's called a CBDC, a central bank digital currency, and Russia is moving forward with these things. They're testing them out. So it's just another thing that goes to show that Russia is not separate from or above the fray from this global governance agenda that is happening, because Cyber Polygon is a cyber simulation event that they did in conjunction with the World Economic Forum this year in July of 2021. So we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. And this article, Bank of Russia Explores Centralized Digital Currency System That Can Restrict Certain Purchases, Cyber Polygon 2021, is by Tim Hinchliffe. It's a great piece from a great publication called The Sociable. So these are some great outlets that may be under the radar, but are definitely worth knowing about. So before we get started, let me just say that if you want to connect with me, you can go to jfodnews.com. Just sign up there for my newsletter. It means a lot to me if you do that. And also you can follow me on Twitter at The Real JFod. Okay, before we get started, let's check the chat. All right. Glenn Combes says, thanks. He says, they pulled the trigger on world domination in 2020. They certainly did, and they certainly are trying to do it. But guess what? If enough of us wake up, it ain't going to happen. And that's what we're doing here today. All right, let's jump in and debunk some geopolitical dynamics here that say that Russia is somehow doing something different and a great job in response to this pandemic and is not just towing the line that everybody else is. So let me pull up this piece here. Cool. There you go. Myth versus reality in COVID Russia. It is time to part ways with the conscience soothing fairy tales. Again, by Riley Wagaman. And there we go. We got that infamous picture of Putin riding the bear. And this one's got a big needle behind him. All right, here we go. Sputnik V is safe. Now, Sputnik V is the name of their vaccination. Sputnik V is safe. Putin is just, this is a quote. This is like a quote by someone that would say that. Sputnik V is safe. Putin is just playing along with the COVID narrative until the petrodollar collapses. Russia is the last bastion of freedom, end quote. Alternative media has created an alternative reality about Russia. The Kremlin has embraced all the same soul-raping public health measures currently terrorizing the Western world, and people are either in denial or making excuses. Okay. And then there's an image right here of the internet in Russia left, which shows Putin on the horse stabbing the coronavirus. Slightly different from the actual Russia right, which is vaccine passports and QR codes. So here we go. There is no compulsory vaccination in Russia, quote unquote. All 85 federal subjects of the Russian Federation now have vaccine mandates, as well as rules requiring digital health certificates for entry to certain businesses, venues, and public institutions. Many regions are denying routine medical care to those without QR codes. Okay, this seems very similar to what's happening throughout Europe and what's happening in certain blue states in America. And let's not even get started on Australia and New Zealand with those totalitarian regimes taking hold. At the federal level, the Kremlin has voiced support for, quote, any measures that encourage Russians to get jabbed, while insisting vaccination remains completely voluntary. A sample of regional flavors of voluntary vaccination in Russia. Here we go. In Novgorod region, children whose parents have not been vaccinated are banned from after-school clubs and other extracurricular activities. Digital passports will be required to use public transport in Tatarstan. The new regulation applies to all residents over the age of 18 without a medical exemption. In St. Petersburg, a negative PCR test cannot be used to obtain a QR code. This means theaters, museums, and restaurants in Russia's second largest city are reserved exclusively for the vaccinated and those with proof of prior infection. At least they're allowing for prior infection to show natural immunity. That has been completely marginalized and rejected in America as though basic science doesn't make any sense. But regardless of that, it's very clear that Russia is towing the same line as many other nations when it comes to these COVID restrictions. Here we go. Muscovites, people living in Moscow, over the age of 60, have been ordered to self-isolate until the end of February. Those who have been vaccinated or have proof of prior infection are exempt from the rule. Probably you read somewhere that Vladimir Putin outlawed compulsory vaccination as part of his master plan to destroy the fractional reserve banking system and bring peace and harmony to the world. Someone lied to you. Sorry about that. Quote, but Sputnik 5 is safe. Sputnik V is safe. Does the Kremlin have access to a time-bending wormhole? Because we keep reading boastful claims about the non-existent results of Sputnik V's long-term, safety and efficacy trials, which are scheduled to end on December 31st, 2022. Like other COVID vaccines, Sputnik V has zoomed through clinical trials with an interim report consisting of 6 months worth of data uses proof of its unassailable long-term safety and efficacy. It didn't help that this already limited data set was plagued by controversy as well as an alarming lack of transparency. Phase three vaccine trials typically require at least 5 years of careful observation. For example, the long-term safety study for J&J's Ebola vaccine, which uses the same AD26 viral vector platform as Sputnik V, began in 2016 and won't end until 2023. Yeah, anybody that says that we know the long-term effects of any of these injections is definitely lying to you, because it's just not possible to know so, because they were just rushed through so quickly. You know what I mean? Let's see what we got in the chat. Glenn says, it's hard for the world to wake up when those in charge constantly injecting us with hopium and narcotic lies. Yes, very well put. Let's keep going. Here we go. Alexander Redko, chairman of the St. Petersburg Professional Association of Medical Workers, noted in July that declaring Sputnik V safe without even waiting for ludicrous speed clinical trials to end is about as scientific as reading tarot cards. Is he wrong? The Russian government clearly thinks so. In December 2020, Russia's health ministry announced it was prematurely ending enrollment for Sputnik V trials, arguing that it would be unethical to administer placebo shots when a proven life-saving vaccine was already available to the public. Quote, everything has now been proven while the pandemic is ongoing, end quote. Alexander Ginsberg, director of the Gamaleya Center, which developed Sputnik V, explained just 4 months after phase three trials had begun. Science deniers claim it's irresponsible to coerce tens of millions of people to get injected with an untested drug. But what these conspiracy theorists don't understand is that any long-term issues would have become apparent within 4 months. Furthermore, Russia has a robust and transparent system in place for flagging side effects. The Russian government does not have a VAERS-like database for reporting and monitoring suspected adverse reactions, and doctors who question the vaccine's safety or efficacy are being threatened with exorbitant fines and prison time. There you go. America, at least we have, although it's marginalized and not a lot of people know about it, we have VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, where people and doctors can input into a database adverse effects, vaccine side effects, vaccine injuries that they have received. However, most people don't know about it. The process is quite robust. It takes like half an hour to an hour to do it all. And a lot of doctors just don't report those adverse events, even if their patients have reported them to them, even though they are supposed to do that. But at least we have that. And it's estimated that only 1% of total vaccine adverse events are actually reported to the database. And that's according to a Harvard study. So any numbers that you see there, which already should be alarming if you look at the VAERS database, are 100 times more alarming if you follow that study and accept that only 1% of the adverse effects are being reported. So it's quite troubling. And Russia doesn't even have anything like that. And doctors that speak out are being threatened with exorbitant fines and even prison time. I believe here what happens to our doctors is they lose their jobs and they get ostracized from society. I don't think that we have prison time quite yet. Quote, the fact is that nothing is registered in Russia at all. Therefore, it is very difficult to understand how many serious complications there are. There are many cases, and we can say that they are related to the vaccine. There is a lot to say, or you can stick your head in the sand and say that there is nothing at all, end quote, according to Pavel Voyrobyov, chairman of the Moscow Scientific Society of Physicians. It's, he said this in an interview, making him an anti-science hate speech criminal in the eyes of the Russian government. Argentina's health ministry is similarly guilty of high crimes against Sputnik V. In October, the South American state revealed that Russia's flagship vaccine was the nation's leader when it came to causing adverse reactions, beating Sinopharm and AstraZeneca by significant margins. And then there's a link here where you can see the full report. You can see this graph here. Clearly, Sputnik V is way out in front in terms of number of adverse effects. There are even thought crimes being carried out by Russia's elected representatives. Duma deputy Mikhail Delyagin argued in an August op-ed that the government's own data suggested that mass compulsory vaccination had no clear neutralizing effect and was making things worse. Yeah, you don't try to max vaccinate in the midst of a pandemic, because the pandemic has strains that are changing, and when you are mutating, and when you vaccine against one strain, by the time that vaccine campaign is rolled out, it's a different strain that the vaccine does not protect against, and actually creates a breeding ground for that new variant to be created, and can cause even more damage to a person who has been vaccinated. I mean, this is basic science. This is basic virology that somehow has gone out the window. For months, the Russian government maintained it was basically impossible to be hospitalized with COVID if you were fully vaccinated. We've shown how that is so not the case all over the world. When it became obvious that this was a slight exaggeration, Gamaleya's director claimed 80% of jabbed Russians falling ill with the virus had purchased fake certificates and were lying about their vaccination status. Ginsburg's tall tale inspired some colorful commentary in Russian media, as one outlet opined, quote, "At first, they said it was enough to get vaccinated once every 2 years so as not to get sick at all, then once a year, then once every 6 months. Now it turns out the vaccination does not even really protect against getting into intensive care or death. And what is the solution? Truth, the Minister of Health, Mr. Borishchenko, still claims that there are no deaths among citizens who have received the vaccine. But people do not live on Mars. They, alas, face these deaths of the vaccinated in life. And then the PR naturally stops working." It's doubtful if the PR ever worked. Last month, Deputy Speaker of the State Pyotr Tolstoy conceded that the government had completely failed to convince the public that Sputnik V was safe and effective. There, quote, "There are few answers to the questions why those who are vaccinated are ill, why those who are vaccinated die, why there are problems and complications after the vaccinations themselves," the high-ranking lawmaker said. The total lack of transparency has spurred the creation of informal databases and Telegram channels where adverse events can be tracked. Instead of stepping up efforts to address safety concerns, the Russian government has compared concerned citizens to terrorists. The Kremlin and its credulous cheerleaders maintain that there's no need to worry about long-term safety because Sputnik V is based on the Gamaleya Center's proven time-tested viral vector-based delivery platform. For example, Kirill Dmitriev, the Harvard-educated ex-Goldman Sachs banker who heads the Russian Direct Investment Fund, which provides financing for Sputnik V, claimed in an op-ed published by RT, quote, "Russia has benefited from modifying for COVID-19 an existing two-vector vaccine platform developed in 2015 for Ebola fever, which went through all phases of clinical trials and was used to help defeat the Ebola epidemic in Africa in 2017. But on Sputnik V's website, we learn, quote, "About 2,000 people in Guinea received injections of Ebola vaccine in 2018 as part of phase three clinical trials." Is Dmitriev really suggesting that a phase three trial held in 2017 to 2018 helped Guinea defeat Ebola? That's quite a brave claim, considering Guinea was declared Ebola-free in June 2016, following an outbreak 2 years earlier. By the time Gamaleya's magic Ebola slurry arrived in Guinea as part of a clinical trial, there was no Ebola left to fight. In February of this year, Guinea reported its first Ebola death since 2016. Can Dmitriev or RT offer some clarification here? Send your questions to RT's famously fearless and objective Russia desk. By the way, why would Dmitriev and Sputnik V's own website brag about injecting 2,000 Africans as part of a clinical trial held a year after Guinea was declared Ebola-free? Well, because that's basically Gamaleya's greatest triumph before inventing Sputnik V in record time. Okay, let's check the chat, see what's going on. Cool, cool. Hey, what's up, everybody? Hope you guys are doing well. Awesome. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to the article. Sputnik V is Gamaleya Center's first viral vector-based vaccine to receive emergency use authorization outside of Russia. Ginsberg, who has been the director of Gamaleya since 1997, has yet to bring a fully approved vaccine to market, despite multiple attempts. In fact, Ginsberg's first vector adenovirus vaccine, AIDVAC flu, resulted in a multi-million dollar embezzlement scandal. Quote, Gamaleya's scientists have copy-pasted Sputnik V from their previous not accepted by the scientific community research. In their genetic memory, a criminal case, WHO skepticism and zero drugs introduced into the market, read the teaser of an investigation published by Fontenka.ru in July 2020. With such an impressive track record, it's hardly surprising that the Gamaleya Center refers to itself as, quote, the world's leading research institution. The center also has world-leading facilities. Seriously, feast your eyes upon these cutting-edge facilities. Okay, and it's an image of pretty much just there's molds visible outside the building, and inside the building, it's just some bare white walls and just an errant ladder just hanging out and a bucket. It's nothing particularly special. Sputnik V, the Gamaleya National Center for Epidemiology and Microbiology, is the world's leading research center. The center was founded in 1891 as a private laboratory. Since 1941, it bears the name of Nikolai Gamaleya, a pioneer in Russian microbiology studies. Okay. A lot of Russians are also very impressed by the fact that Sputnik V's number one fan and one of the drug's original investors is a friendly banker who is trying to introduce a QR code-based payment in Russia and is also developing a digital currency in partnership with JP Morgan. There you go. So they realize that all of this vaccine stuff, all of this vaccine passport stuff, all of the onboarding of the vaccine passport is to create the infrastructure for the digital ID and also the digital currency. First it's paper, then it's QR codes, then it's blockchain. And obviously somebody who's super excited about the vaccine is a friendly banker who is interested in introducing a QR code based payment system in Russia and is also developing a digital currency partnership with JP Morgan. When your favorite WordPress geopolitical analyst exclaims Sputnik V is safe, the appropriate response is, how could you possibly know? And why does the Russian government not want to know? Quote, I guess he doesn't name who the banker is. I guess it's a link. Let's see what happens if we click it. Let's see. Oh, it just went to a blank screen. Let's go back to this. So I don't know who this friendly banker is. When your favorite WordPress geopolitical analyst exclaims Sputnik V is safe, the appropriate response is, how could you possibly know? And why does the Russian government not want to know? Quote, but the Russian government would never deceive its own people, end quote. In June, the emergence of a highly deadly, quote, Moscow strain, later deemed a hypothetical phenomenon, forced authorities to introduce Russia's first vaccine mandate in the capital. Other regions followed suit. Yes, the people grumbled, but COVID cases immediately began to plummet. COVID deaths plateaued. It was a true miracle. New coronavirus cases in Russia Duma elections trigger massive COVID wave requiring nationwide compulsory vaccination and QR codes. New corona deaths in Russia. Duma elections with a super was the Duma election. Duma's the equivalent to like a parliament. The Duma is the parliament in Russia. Duma election was a super spreader event or something. Then something really strange happened. The amazingly effective but highly unpopular coercive COVID policies suddenly stopped working immediately after Duma elections in late September. What a weird coincidence. Obviously, the ruling United Russia Party, which had just secured parliament for another 5 years after an unexpectedly decisive electoral victory, was forced to impose even more coercive COVID policies. If Russians don't like it, they can express their dissatisfaction at the polls in 2026. Russia's descent into compulsory vaccination is a case study in industrial-scale lying and government duplicity. It's a very interesting story. Let's see what's going on in the chat. Cool. What's up, everybody? But Putin. Okay. In January, Russia's president presented a keynote address at the World Economic Forum. There he is. He's back in with the World Economic Forum, the global governance crowd, the public-private partnership people, the ones that are trying to usher in techno-fascism, the transnational capital class, the people that create a liaison situation between multinational corporations and world leaders. And you got, yeah, okay. So you got him giving a speech, his first speech before the esteemed international body since 2009. Beginning his address with a friendly and intimate, "Dear Klaus," that's to Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, Putin recalled how he first met Mr. Schwab in 1992, and since then had regularly attended events organized by the Fourth Industrial Revolution visionary. There's them shaking hands. Awesome. There you go. Putin used this very important speech to call for, quote, expanding the scale of testing and vaccinations, end quote, around the world, describing COVID as an existential threat that required close international cooperation. The entire global economy will need to be rebuilt from the ground up by central banks because the virus is just so deadly and destructive. Quote, the key question today is how to build a program of actions in order to not only quickly restore the global and national economies affected by the pandemic, but to ensure that this recovery is sustainable in the long run, relies on a high quality structure and helps overcome the burden of social imbalances. Clearly, with the above restrictions and macroeconomic policy in mind, economic growth will largely rely on fiscal incentives with state budgets and central banks playing the key role. Is that how you say build back better in Russian? I think it is. We're all trapped in the same oligarch-controlled panopticon, meaning constant surveillance. Maybe it's time to accept that instead of pretending that some jailers are more based than others. Crazy times. Good luck to all. Let's see what this video's got going here. This might be in Russian, but we'll see. Oh, cool. For those listening on the podcast, this is a number of people in a boat playing some music. I'm assuming in Moscow. It's pretty cool, actually. All right, I'll just let it play for a few more seconds. All right, that was pretty cool. Yeah, guys, so that's that article. Russia is on board with the globalist agenda, just like the U.S., just like China, just like Europe. So this is going to have to be a global response. We can't get caught up in a kind of geopolitical sort of favoritism here, because this is happening on a global scale and we need to have a global response to it. And just to further show what's going on in Russia in terms of the fact that they're moving forward with their CBDC, their central bank digital currency, I want to go through one more article. This one's on the Sociable. Again, it's by Tim Hinchliff, who's doing great work covering what's going on with the Great Reset, covering what's going on with the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and covering the COVID narrative very well. So we're just going to read through this one as well. But first, let's just check through the chat. And I got to actually stop sharing the original one. I got to bring this guy up. Hey, there I am. Awesome. Okay, I think because I'm doing this another time, there's not as many folks in the chat, which is okay, because I'm doing this at an atypical time. But let's share this proper article here from The Sociable. Cool, let's see. Yep, there it is. All right, so we got this second article here. Bank of Russia explores centralized digital currency system that can restrict certain purchases. And this came out during Cyber Polygon 2021. A digital ruble will explore setting conditions on permitted terms of use of a given unit of currency, Russia's central bank deputy governor says. Okay, here we go. Russia's central bank is exploring a two-tier digital ruble that would allow users to restrict certain types of purchases, and all transactions would be recorded on a centralized ledger, according to a Cyber Polygon 2021 panel discussion. Quote, just imagine that you are able to give your kids some money in digital rubles and then restrict their use for purchase of junk food, Alexei Zabotkin, deputy governor of Russia's central bank Cyber Polygon, says. Speaking at the annual Cyber Polygon cybersecurities exercise, Bank of Russia Deputy Governor Alexei Zabotkin laid out the central bank's plan for a digital ruble. Let's listen to a little bit. Ruble. Let's listen to a little bit of this.
Point, but the digital ruble shall be more convenient than cash is in its use. It will provide ability to consumers, tokenized form, something which Mark and Matthew already alluded to. The digital ruble will exist in the form of uniquely identifiable units. You can think about them as sort of electronic banknotes. This will permit better traceability of payments and money flow, and also explore the possibility of setting conditions on permitted terms of use of a given unit of currency. And that will, just imagine that you are able to give your kids some pocket money in digital rubles and then restrict their use for purchase of junk food, for example, right? That could be a useful functionality for a customer. And of course, you can come up with hundreds of other similar use cases.
Yeah, I can come up with hundreds of similar use cases, all of which can be very, very draconian, very, very repressive, very, very surveillance, capitalistic, awful situations. Pretty wild that that's where this guy's mind goes with this thing. Let's see what else we got here. Quote, the digital ruble shall be more convenient than cash is in its use, he said, adding, the digital ruble will exist in the form of uniquely identifiable units. You can think about them as sort of electronic banknotes. With these electronic banknotes, users would be able to set limits on what types of purchases can be made. This digital ruble will permit better traceability of payments and money flow, and also explore the possibility of setting conditions as permitted terms of use of a given unit of currency, said Zabotkin. Quote, the Bank of Russia will maintain the centralized ledger on the Bank of Russia's technological platform, and all transactions will be recorded on this ledger. That's what Alexei Zabotkin said at Cyber Polygon 2021. Rather. The Russian Central Bank Authority said that parents could give the digital currency to their children with certain restrictions, such as blocking them from buying junk food. Just imagine that you were able to give your kids some money in digital rubles and then restrict their use for purchases of junk food, for example, he says. That would be a useful functionality for a customer. And of course, you can come up with hundreds of other similar use cases. That's what we were just talking about. Sobotkin added. The author says here, you can let your imagination run wild with those hundreds of other similar use cases could be. But if parents could be allowed to alter the permissions on the digital money, then surely much more powerful entities would be able to do the same, no? Quote, this digital ruble will permit better traceability of payments and money flow, and also explore the possibility of setting conditions on permitted terms of use of a given unit of currency, according to Zabotkin. The World Economic Forum, which is a major partner of the Cyber Polygon exercise. Now, the Cyber Polygon exercise, guys, was something that took place in July of this year between the World Economic Forum, and it was co-sponsored by the Russian government, number of other organizations. And that Cyber Polygon is off their website. What is Cyber Polygon? Cyber Polygon is a unique cybersecurity event that combines the world's largest technical training for corporate teams and an online conference featuring senior officials from international organizations and leading corporations. Every year, the training brings together a wide range of global business and government structures, while the live stream gathers millions of spectators from across the world. So Cyber Polygon basically warns about a dark winter event, some sort of big kind of crazy cyber hack that they apparently, that the global governance crew plans against. Similar to how Event 201 with the global governance transnational capital class all planned against having there be a global pandemic and how they would respond. Now we're seeing how they're responding, which is very draconian and very centralized and very top down. So basically, this is a similar analogous thing for a if there was some sort of like a global hack or something like that. So once again, the World Economic Forum, which is a major partner of the Cyber Polygon exercise, has made its entire platform based on establishing public and private partnerships. We all know about that public-private partnership, stakeholder capitalism. Public-private partnerships means giving more power to private corporations over public institutions. It's what Mussolini would call corporatism, aka fascism. Stakeholder capitalism is basically a trick to make you feel like you're included. You have a stake in it as well, when it really is just further consolidation of wealth and power. When governments are limited in their knowledge and power, the private sector can sweep in to fill the void. In the case of digital currencies, would private payment providers and other financial entities be able to set their own rules on what types of purchases they would allow on their platforms? Yes. If this were to happen in the US, could a private bank or fintech company put a quote, terms of use on the money that could allow a customer to buy a car, for example, but restrict them from buying a firearm? Programmable money, you guys, with all sorts of things you're allowed to do and not allowed to do. This is not something that we want. Quote, last mile access will remain in the hands of the commercial banks, plus possibly other authorized and properly supervised payment service providers, end quote. That's Zabotnik again. He said this at Cyber Polygon 2021. According to the Russian central bank exec, the digital rubles, quote, last mile of access will remain in the hands of the commercial banks, plus possibly other authorized and properly supervised payment service providers. Quote, they will integrate access to digital ruble wallets in their apps, will handle KYC, stands for Know Your Customer, and onboarding of new users, and will devise new products and services which exploit innovative functionalities of the digital ruble, he added. In times of resource shortages, could the last mile access of commercial banks allow them to restrict purchases on certain quantities of goods, such as gasoline, meat, or toilet paper, depending on which permissions they allow on the digital currency that they supply? Yeah. Additionally, Russia's central bank is planning to implement a digital ruble where all transactions would be recorded on a centralized ledger. They're going to track every single transaction everybody makes. These people are control freaks, man. Quote, we see the digital ruble implementation as a two-tiered system, says Zabotkin. Quote, The Bank of Russia will maintain the centralized ledger on the Bank of Russia's technological platform, and all transactions will be recorded on this ledger, the central banker exec added. Under this CBDC scheme, central bank digital currency scheme, all transactions would be recorded on a single centralized ledger. Zabotnik went on to say that the digital ruble would be a choice and that people could still use cash if they wanted to. Yeah, initially, that's how it'll be rolled out as a transitional period. But guess what? Cash, because of inflation, is going to be so degraded in value that that's going to be a way to push it out, marginalize it. People aren't going to be allowed to use it for certain things. And CBDCs are going to more or less take over. Over time, they absolutely will, unless we reject this. Unbelievable. Quote, it will be up to the users to choose between the use of the electronic bank money or the digital ruble as they choose today between the electronic bank money and cash. This is what Zabotnik is saying. However, the central bank representative highlighted that the digital ruble would, quote, increase competition and, quote, create a more level playing field in the payments industry. When you take into account Zabotnik's first assertion that the digital ruble will be more convenient than cash and add in the increased competition factor, then it appears that Russia's central bank is betting on the centralized digital bank currency to win out in the end. There you go. The digital ruble, according to the bet, would be more convenient and more competitive, but at the same time, it would also be centralized, recorded on a ledger, and also come with the ability to restrict purchases. Ugh. Convenience comes with a price of freedom, anonymity. Convenience comes with a price of freedom, anonymity, and limited purchasing power. Quote, the digital ruble shall increase competition and will create a more level playing field in the payments industry. Zabotnik added that the digital ruble will provide people and businesses with a very basic but uniformly and cheaply accessible alternative to electronic bank money. Quote, it will be up to the users to choose between the use of the electronic bank money or the digital ruble as they choose between the electronic bank money and cash. I know sometimes I'm repeating some of these quotes, but I think it's okay because I think it's worthwhile to hear these things a couple times because it's a kind of a difficult concept to totally wrap your head around. Quote, but it shall increase competition and will create a more level playing field in the payments industry, and the results shall be the lower cost and enhanced, more efficient money technology for economic agents, he concluded. Okay. Following up on last year's cyber pandemic simulation, this year's cyber polygon held live training exercises responding to, quote, a targeted supply chain attack on a corporate ecosystem in real time. Running parallel to the training exercise were discussions on how to tackle everything from ransomware and supply chain attacks to implementing, quote, resilient digital currencies and a desire for global governance on the internet. There you go. So, to recap, Russia is pretty much in line with the global pandemic response. They are moving forward and have vaccine passports. They have vaccine mandates in place, and they're moving forward with a central bank digital currency, which will usher us towards the cashless society situation and that level of neo-feudal servitude. So let's not get it twisted and have a U.S. versus Russia debate here. And see Putin as some sort of holdout or great hope against the globalists, because it's just not the case. Let's just check the chat. All right. Here we go. We got a couple people in the chat. What's up, Charlie Brown's Rebellion? Big Brother is watching out for your best interests. Yeah. We got Propaganda Live is here. What's up? How you doing? Propaganda Live says he is why Xi and Putin are part of the, yeah, this is why Xi and Putin are part of the Great Reset. They absolutely are. It's important to see that. Yeah, fuck that fascist noise. What do we got here? They're already pretending that there's a coin shortage in the States, exact change or digital payment only in some places. Wow. Yeah, I did notice that too. That's a way to marginalize currency. Yeah. Cool, cool. Oh, Tim's in the chat. Right on. Thanks for spreading the word. Absolutely. Thank you for your good work, Mr. Hinchliff. Awesome. I hope that some people share this around. I hope that people realize that we're all in this together. You know what I mean? And that we have to have a global response to what is a truly attempt at a global takeover. So that's the deal. I think we're good for today. Once again, the articles were from a great publication called The Off Guardian, which you should check out and look them up. They're doing consistently great work. This article was by Riley Wagaman. Look him up. And then the second article was in a great publication called The Sociable by someone who's doing awesome work, Tim Hinchliff. So definitely look him up as well. It'd be really cool for you guys to join my newsletter at jfodnews.com. I'm going to be getting more consistent with my newsletter coming up, so please connect with me there. And also follow me on Twitter, @TheRealJFod. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate your time. I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day and evening. And let's keep at this, man. All right? Love you guys. Bye-bye.